Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 146 of the Lift Free and Diet Hard podcast. I'm Andrew Coates, and this is going to be one of the, I got a lot of episodes coming up, but I'm actually going to be shifting format just a little bit. So don't be confused in the very near future if I approach this just a little differently. I'll announce more soon. I'm going to be bringing you guys a lot of really incredible guests. But for one of the later episodes on this current style, I've got my good friend, Nick Lamb. Nick Lamb's a PhD. You've been on a bunch before. You're a whole lot of stuff. You're so heavily involved in public speaking education. I definitely want to talk about that. I think you probably talked at more events this year than anyone else I know. You are the host of a lot of in-person and virtual events. So real quick shout, like as soon as I release this, which my hope is I'll get it to you guys, it'll be a Wednesday morning you're listening. So if you're listening to this week, people can still get in on Impact Education Week, which is going on. After you and I record this, I will be on a live, so people are going to miss that, but you can get recordings. But if anybody has any interest in this, they can still catch the lives for free. Shoot you a message, shoot me a message, we'll hook you up. So anyway, brother, it's great to have you back.
Absolutely, absolutely. I appreciate you having me back. This is our third time, which I greatly appreciate. Appreciate being one of the last in the old format, and always a pleasure, man. So thank you for having me.
Well, I mean, again, I'm excited. You've done a lot for me in my career, so I appreciate it. And I want more coaches to be connected to you. I know you're not really like a Facebook person, but, you know, to follow you, I'm going to shout out now, the Online Sleep Coach on Instagram. They've got to, you know, get connected there. And they've got an opportunity, obviously, to get to work with you, literally, especially because I want to talk about this. We're seeing so much interest now in coaches wanting to public speak, to educate, to present. And I think some coaches, big events, like obviously Raise the Bar. And I want to talk about that. I'll be back part of the speaking lineup. It's Dynamite in February, late February, but that's not the only road. So what are some of the things that coaches can do, outlets for public speaking education, but also ways that they can step into that world?
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit the nail where we're definitely seeing a lot more coaches. So we're seeing a lot more reach out about the virtual events I'm hosting, a lot more reach out about the in-person events that I'm hosting. And there's a lot of reasons why. It's a great way to build more career capital. And it's seen in a lot of ways as more of this logical next step and logical progression in the industry, which I can definitely understand. I certainly can relate to. I think in terms of getting in that space more, there's really two different main considerations here. The first of which is something that you and I talk about a lot, and it's actually the subject of our chat later today, which is the authentic relationships that you build in the industry and how you strategically cultivate those relationships, how you put yourself in the right room and not just in the room of being physically there, but being a presence when you're there. We always share the story about Raise the Bar, where Andrew was an attendee the first year, and not just an attendee. He was an immersed attendee to the point where other attendees were actually asking when he was speaking. So that led to Andrew being on the stage the next year. He supported the event. He advocated for the event. He was there and gave to the community of the event. So that's one area. And certainly we can talk more about that area. But the area that I don't think gets talked about as much, and that has become a lot more of an emphasis for myself over the last few years speaking, and that has really become glaring as I've gotten more people present or more people apply to present at my events. And that is how you actually are as a speaker, your actual skill as a presenter. There is this belief in the industry, because so many of the speakers that are at events are not professional speakers. They are people like you and me and Luca and Don and people who are good buddies of ours who are just really great at what they do and end up getting asked to speak, to share what it is that they do. And there's certainly a component of that. If you are excellent at what you do and you're excellent in your brand and you continue to build that and lean into that, speaking opportunities will ultimately come. People will want you to be a part of what they do. Mm. However, if you look at a lot of these individuals, especially as they've grown, and we use a good buddy of ours, Luca, as an example. Luca's always been excellent at what he does. Luca's always been an excellent coach. He's always been excellent in every aspect of his business and the value that he provides. But over the last few years, I have seen an incredible growth and transformation in Luca as an actual speaker, as how he presents on stage. And that's not by accident. And that's not just something that happens. There is still a narrative that's out there that people are born as great speakers, born as great communicators. And speaking, how you speak, how you present, how you get your ideas out there, that's a skill. That's an area of skill development, just like anything else. And it's something you absolutely can craft and work on. You talk about it all the time with writing. How many people ask you, hey, can you connect me to this editor? Can you connect me with this person and get me in front of this person? I want to write more. And that's all well and good. The connections help. However, I know I've heard you present and give this many times. The first thing you tell them is you give them a set of books on how to get better at writing. You writing more didn't happen by accident. It happened by you writing more and giving more intent. So often, I don't connect with writing. I'm not a good writer. That's because you haven't written. It's because you haven't tried to perfect it.
So the writing one is a perfect parallel. And I'll take it this way. There's a lot of trainers who have ended up, because of their reputations as trainers, business people, what have you, as writing for a lot of publications. And this is coming from editors that I talk to. But comparatively few people are actually really good writers. You get someone like a Tony Gentilcore, spectacular writer. Dean Summers, spectacular writer. And I believe that you can actually set yourself apart and put yourself ahead as a writer if you will study writing. That's why I'm so passionate about it. There are opportunities, right? And the same thing is true for speaking. This is what you're saying. I have seen people who are great accomplishment, who get a lot of invitations, who are so-so speakers or not even great speakers. But then there are people, Luca is a great example. I mean, Luca will tell you how, go way back when, and wasn't that great at this stuff, but he's actually a very dynamic, polished speaker. When I got my first invitation a few years ago to public speak anywhere, I texted Luca, hey, you got any books on public speaking, right? It's like, it's exactly what you're talking about. You look at people like, again, Martin Rooney, really dynamic. You can learn these skills. And again, that's why you, given how much experience you have this stuff, you've now stepped into this space. And there are a few people who do it, but it's not much. But now it's, I think you're seeing the need for it. So 100%. What's involved with the Impact Speaker Workshop?
Yeah, so this is something where, again, same thing. If I go back to my first initial speaking engagements, going back 4, 5, 6 years, in comparison to now or in comparison to the last year, it's night and day. And I actually just hosted an Impact Speaker Workshop this past weekend in Toronto. And there were two individuals who were there and attending the workshop who had actually heard me present a few years back, even just a few years back at the very first initial Raise the Bar. And they came up to me. Obviously, they listened to me present all weekend. And they said, you're a completely different person. You're a completely different person. You're a completely different person in terms of how you speak from stage or how you speak and convey your ideas. It's night and day. And so I really had looked at what I had been doing over these last few years and what I had learned about myself, what I learned about these different areas of how you speak. And another great example and representation of the void that exists within this, we did for this Impact Education Week you mentioned at the beginning, we did an open call for presenters, which is something we had never done for a virtual event before. We got close to 60 applications of people in the industry that wanted to speak. And we only selected 5. There was so much focus and emphasis on the content. What was the topic title, the description of the topic title, and that's all well and good. But when you get 60 submissions like that, and everybody submitted a short video of 2 to 3 minutes, the number one thing that jumped out was how you conveyed that message. And very often coaches, because they haven't spent time in these communication and speaking skills in terms of your voice and your body language and how you actually speak, they use what I call a content shield. They lean so heavily on their content that now the content becomes the only point or main point of emphasis. And now you're forgetting about the fact that the person or people in front of you have to understand the content. It has to actually stick with them. It actually land with them. What I always say is there's what you know, what you've learned and what you know. There's what you can communicate. And then there's what a layer past that, there's what actually lands and sticks with someone else, what actually gets them to take action. And this ultimately comes down to how you deliver your message, how you actually speak. Things like your voice, something no one really thinks about. Everybody always just says, I hate the way I sound. I hate the way my voice sounds. Your current voice, and I can attest to this, and if you listen to my voice a few years ago, it's not the same as it is now. Your current voice is not your natural voice. It's your habitual voice. And that's a big difference. It's the voice that you've been conditioned to use in certain ways. The way we've been breaking it down in the workshop is to think about speaking and communication fitness, much like you think about other aspects of fitness, the fitness that we're all familiar with, right? Where your voice, as an example, is your aerobic system. It's the delivery, right? Your aerobic system delivers more oxygen and energy to working tissues and to the rest of your body. Your voice allows you to deliver your message more effectively. Without that, people don't give consideration to the fact that your voice, for example, how I'm speaking to you right now, whether you realize it or not, is making you feel a certain way. Your voice makes other people feel. There's a reason why, I'm sure if I asked you this right now, Andrew, what's your favorite book? You have a favorite book?
The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, which is a joke. No, that is not my favorite book.
But one book that you've read multiple times that's a favorite.
The Obstacles Away, Ryan Hawley, is one of those books.
Okay. Can you recite every word on one page of that book, any page of that book?
Nope.
Okay. Do you have a favorite Tool song? One of
yes.
them.
Yes, I do.
Can you recite every word of that song?
From scratch, no. As I sing along to it, prompted, I can.
Right. Roughly 300 words in a page of a book, roughly 300 words in a song. Why people remember the song is because there's melody in the song. There's tone and emotion and feel in the song. There's melody and emotion and tone in your voice. If I make a disgusted face right now, I sound disgusted. My voice sounds disgusted. If I make a happy face, my voice sounds more happy. Right? So your voice is your aerobic system. Your body language, your posture, your ability to make eye contact, what you do with your hands.
Yep.
That's your range of motion and your mobility. It provides you support and range. From a range of motion perspective and movement, it allows you to do more. And when you are comfortable with your body language, it allows you to do more from a speaking and communication perspective. Storytelling, which is something we talk a lot about in the workshop, teaching and educating with stories that people actually connect and relate to, is like strength. Strength makes everything better. Somebody who is stronger, it improves their functionality, it improves their athletic performance, it improves everything else. When you're able to tell stories and tell them well, it improves everything else in your communication, your message, and your teaching, and your education, and your coaching. The structure of your content and how you put it all together, where everybody focuses, my slides and my my everything I put together is athletic development and skill development, where without all the other elements, you can't have the best possible athletic and performance build out. Without all those other elements of speaking, you can't have the best possible presentation or best way of delivering your message.
Let's pause there for a second, because I want to share one of the things that I really do with my public speaking. In the slides are really key. One of the big mistakes that people make is too much text, too many bullet points per slide, too much reliance on text throughout your slides, right?
For sure.
And what ends up happening is a lot of speakers use this to rely upon it to remember their presentation. Now, the other end of the spectrum is like, you probably won't effectively memorize your presentation, but I'll teach you kind of how I do this. But what the mistake that we make when we read off a slide, there's a few. Number one is we do it exclusively. We're reading off a screen versus making eye contact with the audience. That's one. But two, if there's a lot of material to read, it's very hard for the audience to actually focus on you. And slides compete for your attention, for attention with you, right?
That's if I could interject, yeah. If I could interject with one thing, a manifestation of that and why that's so important and why your body language is important is that the visual cortex of the brain processes quicker than the auditory complex of the brain. So if people are overly focused on reading and processing your slides that they see, they can't hear what you're saying.
And I find when I'm in the audience, I find that very distracting. So here's actually how, I'll give you guys an example. I'm building a presentation for an event I'm doing in February. Something that's not yours. I can share it. It's Kabuki Education Week. I've done it 3 years in a row. You've been a part of it. And it's based on an article that I wrote for them on cross education. You know, the phenomenon where if you have an injured, immobilized limb, you train the other limb, you'll actually spare muscle and strength with that limb. And there's a whole bunch of research, a whole bunch of implications, a whole bunch of programming. I already have the article. If someone wants it, it's the most comprehensive resource for trainers that exists on the topic, right? I built it that way. And so I stood up with my laptop in front of me and I started going through the flow of what I imagined for the presentation. And I had the article open, I was following it. And then I'm making notes about all the points I want to make the slides. But then what was happening was stories were organically coming to the surface about specific topics. I'd write down those stories. Now, here's a key to how I set up slides. I will use some bullet pointed text. That's fine. Too much, overkill. But I will use pictures as reference points. And those pictures are my cues for the points I'm trying to make and the stories I want to tell. And the picture it doesn't distract people. It actually enhances it. So the biggest thing to clean up your presentation skills and will help you remember your stuff. Number one is you do have to rehearse and prepare, but it's not about memorizing. It's about knowing your material so well that you can actually loosely play upon it. For example, last year, Raise the Bar. My slides got corrupted in the translation. I could get most of it. Like most of it was fine, but there were some words that were out of place, what have you. Number one, we had fun with it. The audience was laughing the whole time, right? It was actually made it stand out. Happy accident. Two, I knew the material enough that an inexperienced speaker would have gotten up, seen this, and it could have completely flustered them, ruined everything. They're nervous. You never get it back, right? So I rolled with it. Everybody had fun with it. People still joke about it. So pictures and stories, like you said, really huge stuff. What else?
So building off of that with putting your slides together and leaning into situations like that happen, I think actually working back a step, because one of the other things that comes up, of course, for newer speakers or people who are trying to do more of these things is the idea of stage fright, right? Or stage fear that exists, this nervousness that exists. So a few things that I think are really important to highlight with that. So if you're holding yourself back from putting yourself out there to speak or you're turning away an opportunity because of that, again, here are some things to think about. The first thing is distinguishing between stage fright and stage anxiety. Fear and anxiety are two distinctly different things. Fear is when something is directly in front of you that you're actually faced with. For example, if you are in the woods and you are faced 100 feet ahead with a grizzly bear, and you have to figure out what you're going to do in that situation, when you have a fear response to that, you're actually faced with it. Anxiety is the imagined anticipation. It's living with something that doesn't actually exist. That would be walking through the woods and thinking there could be a bear ahead of you and feeling a similar type of response because of that. So one of the biggest things that people experience with this is the anxiety, and it's because their anxiety is focused on negative outcomes. All these things that people create in their head of forgetting your slides, forgetting what to say, your slides not pulling up, being up there and forgetting to put on pants, or any of the ridiculous things that people think, right? But one of the most powerful shifts, and it's simple, but one of the most powerful shifts is to think about and imagine an awesome scenario and an awesome outcome and to live with that. So if you have a presentation that's coming up, make the imagined scenario something awesome. The audience responding really well, people coming up to you after the fact, feeling great about it. You go from stage fright, stage anxiety, to stage excitement. Now you're actually excited. And anxiety and excitement are pretty close in terms of being the same sides of the coin, right? It's, you feel pretty similar. Your heart is beating faster. You're feeling similar, but how you translate it is very different when you're excited versus just being anxious about a negative outcome. So imagine the awesome outcomes and scenarios. A couple other things with stage fear and stage anxiety. Nervousness, being nervous, means you care. It means you're connected to what you're about to do. You ask any high performer in any setting, there's been Venus Williams, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, all have been quoted as saying that when they don't feel nervous is when they're more worried, because it means they're not invested and connected in what's about to happen. They're not there. They're not present in it. So don't think that you have to overcome the idea of nervousness. Use it as a reminder of the fact that you genuinely care. And the last thing that I'll say on this is to think about the audience, whether that be an audience of a few people or a larger audience with Raise the Bar, a few hundred people. The audience wants you to succeed. They're pulling for you and they want you to win. No one goes to the theater hoping that the actor and performer messes up. Nobody goes to an event to hear a speaker and hope that it sucks and they don't get anything out of it. When you win on stage, the audience wins. They're pulling for you. They want you to succeed. They're on your side. Nobody wants you to fail. I feel that's another powerful mindset shift. If sometimes you see somebody just glaring or staring at you and you're thinking that they're praying for your downfall, but if you do well and provide value, then they're getting something out of it too.
No one wants to spend an hour sitting through a terrible presentation.
No, absolutely not.
So obviously people desire to stand on the stage. And even if the ones are intimidated by it, there's a desire to stand on the stage. And so I think it's really important that coaches get clear on why. I think there's two sort of pathways. I've definitely seen status-seeking behavior in the industry. Now, status-seeking behavior is a very human thing. It's just the degree to which it's overriding stuff, right? I think we go to these events, we see, you know, these successful people on the stage, the attention they're getting. I think there's some people who go like, oh, I would love to be recognized like that. So let's put a pin in that one. I think then there are also people like, oh, I'm entitled to that. It's the latter type of mentality I usually deflect. And, you know, personally, I get a fair number of requests with my event, excuse me, where, you know, hey, can I come speak? And a lot of them are actually really qualified, good people. When you put together an event, we literally struggle with the limitation of, I have this number of slots. And if it's a live in person, then you're covering the cost of your people. I mean, raise the bar this year and last year. How many people asked you, and like not just like up and comers who are interested, but like probably some really, really qualified heavyweight people who are like, hey, I'd love to be a part of this. How much of that did you have to deal with?
A lot, which I mean, in one sense, it's a good problem to have, and one that I'm grateful and Derek and I are humbled to have that problem. But it is challenging because, and this is where the virtual side of things just becomes so valuable, of being able to give so many great people and so many great messages a platform. Because this is, I think, the shift with that. It's okay to have a certain amount of ego. I'll be the first to admit, and Derek and I have even talked about this, and why it works well for us with Raise the Bar is, of course, Derek enjoys being on stage and enjoys the attention, but I think it's more important for me, and it's my drive, my main driver. And if you are interested in these, check out Art of Coaching and Brett Bartholomew. He's got a quiz, The Six Drives, to help you really identify what drives you in the decisions that you make. It's so eye-opening, and it's so pinpointed that mine was achievement. So even when I achieve something successful or something goes well, it's on to the next one. It's on to the next piece. And that's something I struggle with. It's something I grapple with all the time, to not really be able to take solace in something being done and done well and enjoy that. It's really hard.
The gap and the gain. There's a great book on this where we perpetually can live within the gap between where we are and where we want to be. It's like the horizon. The analogy of the horizon is perfect for this, because as you move closer and closer to the horizon, we're always still looking at the horizon. We never actually reach the actual horizon, in a sense. So we struggle to actually pause and go, hey, I've achieved this. I think it might have been Chris Williams, and I've been listening to his podcast a lot, or maybe it was Hormozy or some combination, who talked, I can't remember the exact quote, but it's like, you're already achieved a lot of things that you said would make you happy. If you look back, like I look at some of the things the last couple of years, and like, holy shit. And yet we still are looking to the next thing, what we want to accomplish.
Even a step beyond that. You were a part of this event as well. Jonathan Goodman's last event, yes. Or previous event, the Obvious Choice Summit. One of the speakers was Dr. Jillian Mandick, and her entire focus in her PhD is on the study of happiness. Mm. And the main takeaway, the main point, was that when we are chasing these outcomes, we're chasing these achievements, whether that be something superficial, a house or a car, or it can be a speaking engagement or an opportunity like that. There are two things that are universally true. When you actually get that thing and accomplish that thing, it doesn't make you feel nearly as happy as you thought it would. And it doesn't make you feel happy for nearly as long as you thought it would. It's a very fleeting. So I think this leads into actually one of the points that I was going to make with this, which is it's okay to have a bit of the ego and wanting the speaking and getting more speaking to be something you do for yourself and to chase that. But think of it more in the mind of, and this is what I'm trying to build with these workshops as well, is that you have a powerful message to share and powerful messages to share with others. And speaking is a vehicle for you to do that and to get it out there more, for you to impact more lives, for you to help more people. And when you shift that, it also shifts how you perform when you speak, because so much of the going back to stage fear and all of those things, so much of that is introspective and thinking about, how do I sound? What do people think about me? Do people like me? Do they, all these things that we're second guessing about ourselves. But if your focus is just on delivering value to the people in front of you, it shifts completely. And you take away from some of those areas of being so much harder on yourself. And I find it also changes how you approach trying to get speaking engagements. We talk about this all the time, and we're going to talk about this later today. The difference between being transformational and being transactional. And a lot of times when we're trying to get more speaking opportunities, especially, we're very transactional in our interactions. And I'll be the first to admit, I was 100%. That was my approach. And that was my way. I was reaching out, and it was basically, hey, look at me. This is what I was doing. I'm doing sleep related content. I love to present. But I mean, think about this in any area of your own business, whether you're a coach or you have your own brick and mortar business, or think of another business that just reached out to you in that context. If you'd be likely to respond to them or engage with them, chances are you wouldn't.
Here's the key. Here's the key. Back when I was putting together even our 2019 event, we'd already set the lineup. And then Christian Thibodeau messaged me. And Christian and I hadn't interacted before. We had each other on Facebook. That was it. And he said, hey, man, this looks great. I'd love to be able to get to be a part of this. And we got into conversation, and it didn't work that year. But, you know, he was part of my plans when we were looking at 2020. Now 2020, we lost, blah, blah, blah. He was actually in our plans for this time around. But then there was like Swiss the next week, which he was committed to. So it interfered. But Christian Thibodeau has built an incredible legacy as a coach, writer, a lot of demonstration of success, a lot of resources that he's built. And this is where I try to direct trainers. And I talk about this a lot in my media. I've done the presentation last year at Raise the Bar was literally about this sort of thing. It's about building brand. Put people in a position where they can't not include you in an event. Ultimately, that's what I did for Raise the Bar, right? And for last year, and now I'm back this year, is A, I can put butts in seats. I've demonstrated that. And, you know, and people are funny about social media following, but and some people are very negative about it. But social media following can be powerful as long as it's the right kind of following. If it's reflective of you having built a visible legacy in your career, I find writing is a phenomenal vehicle for this, getting published in a lot of different publications. Some people have achieved this through success with podcasting. Some people have done really good things with, say, YouTube. I like using Jeff Nippert is someone in the industry who's, you know, pretty well known. And most of his early traction was from YouTube and podcast stuff. Mm. So, but if you can demonstrate that you are, you know, a visible enough figure within the fitness industry and beyond, it puts you in a position where it's very easy to say, yeah, I can use one of my spots for an event for you, because I know that your name will individually bring people and be part of, you know, the entire set. When I was putting together, you know, Evolve Business and Coaching Conference for this past October, one of the goals was I wanted the picture of all the speakers together to make people go, holy shit. And that's exactly what happened.
And it did.
Incredible turnout, right? And that was the thing. So if someone wants to get into an event like that or Raise the Bar, they really have to force our hand to say, wow, you know, let's say Layla Hormozi rolls up to you and messages and goes, hey, I'm interested in more speaking. You know, would you be interested in having me speak at the event? You would be an idiot to say, I'm sorry, Layla, we don't have room for you. You'd figure it the fuck out. You'd put her in there because she's blown up so big, right?
100%.
And not everybody's going to be able to do what the Hormozis do and have their resources, but Alex has literally written books now about how to do this shit. $100 million leads, literally talks about building media. So that's one thing. Now, there's another road that I think is also important. And I want to hear your thoughts on this, but it's the person who's interested in, and quite frankly, I think there's actually maybe more value in this, is getting in front of local businesses and developing a reputation in the contacts to get ultimately paid to speak in front of businesses. And this can also put you in front of clientele, whereas speaking in front of a bunch of coaches, unless you're a business mentor, may not necessarily even be a great vehicle for income. So your thoughts on this route?
Yeah. So I think, and this is actually the point I was going to make anyway, which is, I think there's a great intersection to the two main areas we're talking about here, where on your side, it's the career capital and the brand that you build piece, which in any setting is going to be valuable. So even if you start to go the route of businesses, although I would say in a lot of instances, sometimes it's not as important because they're bringing a lot of their own audience and they want somebody who's just going to really deliver and deliver well. But there might absolutely be instances where they're going to, of course, look to who you are, what you've done, the audience that you've built and how you foster that. So your brand that ultimately matters and is just going to support everything that you're doing. But this is where I think there's so much value in developing how you actually speak and how you communicate. Some of the things I talked about earlier, because while the branding and other areas and even the things that we talk about might be the thing that, like you said, gets that foot in the door or puts you in a situation where you're getting an invitation or where somebody can't really say no, what keeps you in it and what allows you to actually make this a viable part of what you do is being able to do it well, right? Think about this from a coaching perspective. If you were a great marketer and could get a lot of clients in the door, but you were a shitty coach, clients aren't going to stay. And so this is the, again, as seemingly simple as this is and obvious as this is, I don't find that in our industry, there's a lot of the development on the speaking skills. Like you said, there's a few, and Brett Bartholomew as an example of somebody who teaches this and does it well, but there's just not a lot in comparison to so many other areas. And I mean, and here's the thing too, in doing this, going down this path and trying to develop this, while the overall intention might be to educate and get speaking opportunities in business or otherwise, it's got such a trickle down and a carryover to everything else. It's going to make you a better coach. It's going to make you better in your personal relationships. I can say unequivocally that by focusing on these things over the last few years to become a better speaker, becoming a better speaker was the focus. It's improved other areas of my life. It improves how I communicate with other people in the industry. It improves how I communicate with my wife. Sometimes the breakdowns in communications that we have, where my wife is very straightforward and more blunt in her way of speaking, it changes the way that we can connect and we can communicate. So I think the beauty of this is that it has a carryover into so many other areas of your life. And so if speaking is something that you want to do more of, and I do think it's a worthwhile goal, I would say prioritize just as much of the skill development, and you can develop the skill because, and I think I'm a pretty good example of that because this is something you're on me all the time about, but in coinciding with all these speaking opportunities, I haven't done a great job or even a good job of building the social media and the brand attached to that. But at a lot of events, many of the events I've been at, I've delivered. And that has led to the opportunity for more because I've gotten better at the craft of speaking itself. So again, I would say the biggest thing alongside your brand and your career capital is to really lean into just getting better at how you speak and how you communicate. And at the best case scenario, you're going to find a lot of opportunities for continued speaking. And in the worst case scenario, you're just going to become a little bit better at communicating and speaking in some of the areas of your professional and personal life.
It's, you know, when we're coaching people, a lot of it's one-to-one. Some of it's one-to-many, you know, group classes or, you know, other group vehicles. Standing on stage is communicating one-to-many. And there is actually a two-way relationship. It's not just you standing there orating for other people. It's actually important that you pay attention to your audience. I'll give you an example. I won't say any names, but I was speaking at an event. Went great, had a great experience there. Big room. One of the speakers, you know, a lot of experience. In fact, I would say very, very confident public speaker. Got on stage and launched into something that was 2 to 3 levels above the level of the audience. It's like, you know, you're reading to 6th graders at a university level is kind of what this presentation was. Now, I recognize this for what it was. This was, you know, hey, look at how smart I am. You know, I'm going to talk down to you guys a little bit, but didn't have the room. The room was kind of was quiet, wasn't engaged, right? The energy of the room wasn't engaged. And then maybe halfway through the presentation, he visibly got agitated on stage and told them to bring up the lights and then shifted gears and then was actually fantastic. But he'd failed to read the room initially until he finally kind of had a weird moment. And first of all, you're not lecturing people. You're not talking down to people. I think one of the most powerful things you can do is to ask a lot of questions, get people to raise their hands, get them engaged. It does a really wonderful job of holding their attention. If you can, 100%. I think one of the most critical skills is to be able to read and hold the attention of the room. If you can do that, it keeps them interested. And like you talked about, stories are a big part of that.
Definitely.
And if you can hone in on that skill, you can do magical shit on stage.
Here's a way to, here's another way to think about it too. We've all heard the term presence, right? Somebody walks on stage or they enter a room and they have a certain presence. That's these areas of development that I'm talking about that make a difference. When there's, I can't say how many times I used to listen to a speaker or hear a speaker and just connect and resonate with them and feel like they were this excellent speaker and not even really be able to pinpoint what it was. It was even sometimes the content wasn't even something that was directly important to me. And it wasn't, it was something about them and the way that they were delivering it. They had presence. They filled the room. Mm. And that's, you fill the room with your voice. So much, so little consideration is given to this. And I know I mentioned it a bit earlier, but when you are monotone with your voice, or you can't elevate your volume of your voice, or you don't have any emotion or melody or anything in your voice, people disengage. Even without them realizing it, when you don't vary your rate of speech, for example, if I only spoke fast, or I only spoke slow, or I only spoke somewhere in the middle and I didn't vary it at all, the brain of the person or people listening disengages because it can predict what's coming next. So your voice is your presence. Do you get enough volume? Do you have emotion in your voice that moves people? Your body language of being able to own the room with your posture and own the room with how you move around. These things, again, that's presence. If you stay in the same place and you have a monotone body and a monotone voice, you don't have a presence. You don't have the presence in the room. And like you said, I mean, having that presence and being able to read the room and fill the room is one of those really important skills.
And this can show up very different. Martin Rooney, if anybody ever has a chance to see Martin Rooney, Martin, probably at least in the fitness sphere, you know, maybe, but Tony Robbins, I think, would probably be the ultimate, but Martin Rooney has big energy. He's high energy. He can get loud. He definitely like modulates everything. He moves around. He'll use props. Martin is electric on stage. But I would argue that Krista Scott Dixon is every bit as captivating. And Krista, very, very small statured human, generally fairly soft-spoken, but she'll hold a room, and the way that she speaks and talks. John Goodman, for the little public speaking he does, he'll usually sit on a chair. He's not moving around. And John has a way of storytelling and pacing that everybody hangs on every word. So not everybody's even going to have the same presentation style, personality, presence.
Nor should you.
Nor would you want them,
right? To. And here's a way to think about it that I think you mentioned energy with Martin. Don't try and study Martin. Don't try and be Martin. Don't try to replicate Martin's energy. But there's something to be said for being generous with your own authentic energy. So for example, when you're on stage, it's intentionally being generous with your energy. In an authentic way, you know what your way of that is, but it is pushing outside of what your typical is in terms of energy. Because if you're not generous with your energy, you're not connecting with the audience. So for Krista, even though she's more soft-spoken, I know she's generous with her energy of how she speaks and how she delivers, more outside of how she'd be having a typical conversation. Same goes for John, where I know he's more generous with his energy, where he'd much rather be more introspective and thinking and writing and taking notes, but he's generous with his energy and sharing his stories and sharing that message. So it's being intentional and generous with your energy, as long as it's in an authentic way.
So you've been involved in a ton of events. I mean, not just as a speaker. I mean, this past year, like you said, you were behind the scenes on the Obvious Choice Summit, John Goodman's. You ran the infrastructure for Allie Gilbert's Silverback Summit, the virtual side. You did your own Recovering Sleep Summit. You did More Than a Trainer Virtual Summit, which is in partnership with Precision Nutrition. You're doing, you know, Impact Education Week right now. And of course, the one I'm really excited about, above, because I love the live and in-person stuff, is Raise the Bar. So what do you guys got in store? Why should people join us at Raise the Bar this year?
Obviously, I'm a bit biased, but we really set out to make Raise the Bar unique and something different in the industry. We, Derek, when I say we, Derek, my business partner and co-host of the event, we had both been in the industry a while. We both had attended a lot of events, even hosted some other events. And we felt there was a lot of consistencies and similarities in events. And we wanted to create something that was different. And we wanted to create something that was different in two ways. One was that it wasn't just your typical standard fitness content. So the things that we talk about at Raise the Bar, things that Andrew presents about at Raise the Bar and others present, are not your typical training X's and O's. They are how to develop as a business, as a person, as a brand, which ultimately, if you want to sustain long-term in the industry, these things are necessary. Going back to all the things we talked about, right? The other piece is we wanted to really lean into community and develop something that was special in terms of community. And that, to this point, we've had 2 years of Raise the Bar. That's been the biggest point of feedback and takeaway, is people feeling like they're actually a part of something bigger, to where the speakers aren't there in and out. They're not there. It's a requirement. It's not something we just kind of loosely mention to speakers anymore. Speakers are there for the weekend. They're there to be a part of the event with you. John Goodman sat for 3 days filling a notebook with notes and taking pictures with people at the local grocery store down the road. Yep. It's the speakers are there to immerse with you. And we've been really fortunate in that we have a Raise the Bar family of people that we continue to have every year, like Luca and Andrew and Kelsey and Dennis and Don Saladino. And then we're very, 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 very strategic about the new speakers that we bring in each year. So we're really excited that we have some new speakers this upcoming year. We have Funk Roberts, who is one of a kind. We have Eve Guzman, who is an absolute powerhouse. I know how you feel about Eve as well. And then we have Adam Bornstein, who is behind some absolutely ridiculous things in the industry that you may not even realize he was behind. So again, being very biased, but truly believing that Raise the Bar is something that is not your typical fitness event.
And I appreciate you guys having me involved. I mean, shit, I always appreciate our conversations, because I'm proud of this. I'm going to say this. I helped you get 3 big speakers each of the last 2 years. And that is something that, like, just, we'll talk about this. Obviously, by the time this is aired, my live conversation with you for Impact will have been over, but you guys can go and grab the recordings. But we're going to talk about how that happens, the relationship side of stuff. Where can people find you on your social media or anywhere else so they can explore more stuff about public speaking if they're interested? Because I know that interest is out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So from a branding perspective and social media perspective, I've been the online sleep coach for a very long time. And that is still a main page and hub. But I have a newer Instagram page that is where I'm focusing all the effort in terms of public speaking skills and events. And that is at Impact Education Events. So this is where we're going to have much more of the details on public speaking skills development to learn more about. We're going to be doing a lot more of the Impact Speaker Workshops. It's 2 live days. The goal is ultimately to push you outside of your comfort zone in terms of how you speak and how you actually convey your message. We're going to, again, be having a lot more locations over the course of next year, which I'm incredibly excited about. We're also doing a 6-month virtual speaker academy as well, which is going to start in mid-January. It'll be bi-weekly teachings. We're going to bring in a lot of guest experts. And at the end of the 6 months, we are going to host a live in-person event in Orlando in August that will be exclusively for people who have completed the mentorship to speak at. So really, I love this space. The speaking has changed my life. It's changed my career. I've made the commitment to do way more speaking engagements than I ever thought. And I'm excited to share some of the things that I've learned, some of the mistakes that I've made. And yeah, and I appreciate you having me on, man.
Oh, this is easy. I mean, I even hear, like, to your point, I hear a difference in your presence between your earliest, you know, appearance here on the podcast versus now. It's different, right? So we evolve, we grow, we get better. I would easily argue that my more recent public speaking stuff is more polished, more confident than even my earliest stuff. And in a fairly short window, because I've had a lot in a very short period of time. We've talked a lot about kind of why that's happened. Relationships and connections are a big part. Brand development is a big part, but also, you know, a dedication to becoming better at it. So I would say everybody, wherever possible, you know, try to pursue all those avenues. But I want you guys to take very seriously having Nick as a resource. Go check out what he's doing. For everybody listening, there is probably a coach, probably someone in your world who's really interested in this sort of thing. They like the idea of education. They like the idea of speaking. Put this in their lap. Take it, DM this link right to that friend of yours and say, here, listen to this. This will help you. That's the way that you can share, support this podcast. Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate you guys tuning in. I know I've been inconsistent in getting episodes the last few weeks. I do, again, apologize. The plan is for the new year to get them out virtually weekly. There's been a lot going on. And once I get that steady rhythm and flow, we'll be back to normal. So thank you so much.